Hello and welcome to the next episode of the Ironworks podcast in collaboration with the Scattered Abroad Network. I'm Ryan, and with me as always is Matt. Today we are going to be in season one, episode four, and our subject that we are going to cover is modesty. Now, modesty is a chapter that Matt wrote, and we're going to be asking Matt quite a few questions regarding this subject, a very important subject, certainly. But before we get to that, we want to talk about an upcoming event this next month. It's going to be the first annual Oklahoma Bible Lectures, and Matt's going to tell us a little more about that event.
Yeah, so that's going to be a work of the Church of Christ at Whispering Hills, where I preach. We're going to have several guys come out. We're going to hold it kind of like a gospel meeting, except on Monday and Tuesday night we'll have two speakers instead of just one. On Sunday we will have BJ Clark come, and on the remaining days we've got Kino Shrum, we've got Ryan Beavers, and we've got Michael Clark and Chase Green, and then our very own Don Riedheimer is going to do Wednesday. And so we are excited about that, looking forward to that. And so if you are in Oklahoma or you are in the relative area where you can come and drive a short distance, I mean, you know, if you're in Joplin, you can drive a couple hours. I mean, you know, this is not far. If you want to take a little vacation and come and check out what Broken Arrow, Tulsa area is like, there's lots to do. So you can come and hang out. But we're excited about it. There's a lot that we need to do for it still to get ready, and but we're looking forward to it, just really excited. We're trying to really show some foundational principles and try to build upon those kind of foundational principles in the church. And so I'm looking forward to it. And then we're after that, like we said, this is the first annual, and so already working as well on next year, trying to get that nailed down and get some different speakers in for that, and trying to get topics nailed down. And so, yeah, just looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun thing.
Yeah, I think what you said earlier was really great, because one of the benefits of living in green country, Northeast Oklahoma, is that we have a reach into four states. So Kansas, Arkansas, and Missouri all could come here, and it'd be relatively close, couple hour drive, and be a wonderful thing.
Yeah. I mean, you're like a couple hours from Wichita, I think. You know? Yeah, so indeed. It's not really that far. So yeah, there's. You know, Arkansas is really not that. I mean, maybe a couple hours from Arkansas too. I think an hour and a half. I think to the border. I don't know, but
right.
Anyway, and you get to drive 80. I mean, so that's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I love the turnpike.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that a lot. We've tried to advertise that a bit. Hopefully that this event will help strengthen this area of the church in Oklahoma. You know, it needs stuff like this, and so we're looking forward to providing that.
Excellent. All right, well, the subject matter is what to wear, defining modesty, and this is a very important topic, one that is widely confused. Sometimes it becomes emotionally charged at times, and people have lots of questions, and rightfully so. We need to do the same that we do with all Bible questions and look into God's Word and define modesty by God's terms. So, Matt, let's talk about that. Give me your thoughts on defining modesty.
Yeah, so there's a lot to say here, because, you know, first and foremost, talk about the emotional aspect of it. I haven't always followed modesty. My parents didn't know it. They didn't teach it to me, because, I mean, clearly they didn't know it, so they couldn't teach it. And then, you know, in the congregations where I was, like, I mean, it was kind of taught, but, like, not really. It's almost like these are the guidelines when you go on youth events, but, like, you know, there's nothing really said of, like, well, this is what the Bible says. And I've even met a lot of brethren that they would say, well, the Bible really doesn't define modesty. But that's kind of a funny situation, because why would the Bible tell you to be modest and to adorn yourself modestly and yet not tell you how to do that? That would be kind of, you know, kind of cruel, I guess, of God to do. But the real interesting thing is that God did define modesty. We don't have to do any guesswork really on this. There's a lot of application that you know, is made in the book. We'll also make additional application here. Matter of fact, in the book, we have this chapter on modesty, but then we have another chapter, an appendix chapter yes. here, and on modesty as well. But I would like to share with you some things, you know, about, you know, this basic definition of modesty, and just kind of, you know, if you're looking through the book, you know, this is not going to be exactly going from that book, but. You know, the term modesty and the term nakedness really coincide in scriptures. And when you think about this, just to kind of, you know, go through this, I guess, kind of quickly. When you go to the very first time in the Bible, in Genesis 3, and you look at the idea of nakedness, in verse 21... God makes for them coats of skin, and this is a long shirt-like garment, generally with sleeves, that covered Adam and Eve from their shoulders to their knees. And so, modesty and nakedness has always been a part of God's moral standard. I think that we have this in this chapter on it, but you know, there's a difference between. The old law and the new law.
Certainly.
But then there are also moral laws that the difference with those is that they just don't change.
Yeah.
They are always the same. And this is one of those things that's always been the same. If God has determined something as nakedness, it's always nakedness. And so anyway, when you're looking at this, a couple of things to mention. As we go on, there's some passages. Let's start in Exodus chapter 28. In Exodus 28 and verse 42, I'm using the American Standard Version here. Normally on the podcast, we try to do the New King James, but this is what I've got here on my notes. Thou shalt make them linen breeches to cover the flesh of their nakedness. From the loins even unto the thighs they shall reach. That's 28:42, Exodus 28:42. And so linen breeches, the Easton's Bible Dictionary talks about this. This is an article of clothing covered from the waist to a little above the knee. So the idea is that they're wearing like a dress-like garment, you know, mm-hmm. what we would consider like a dress-like garment. And they've got to have these linen breeches, which is technically underwear,
yeah.
that's reaching down, covering their nakedness. And so it says, you know, the flesh of their nakedness. And what is that? The loins, even unto the thighs shall they reach. Now, mm-hmm. when you think about the thigh, where does the thigh go to? Mm-hmm. The thigh goes to your knee.
Yep.
You know, your thigh... goes from all the way up from your hip all the way down to your knee. And so in Exodus 20, though, there is another passage. In Exodus 20 and verse 26, neither shalt thou go up by steps unto mine altar, that thy nakedness be not uncovered thereon. This is interesting because, you know, they built a ramp up to the altar instead of having steps. Now, if you're like me and you've never worn a dress before, I can't really say that. I think probably as a kid, I probably put on a sister's dress here and there. But, I'm a man. I don't wear dresses. And, in my adult life, I'm thinking, I don't know what it would be like to wear a dress, mm-hmm. you know. But evidently... You know, when you talk to women, of course, they know exactly what it's like to wear a dress. And if you're walking up steps, what happens to a dress when you're walking up steps? Well, it's gonna flap up with, mm-hmm. with your knees coming up. And that could, you know, flap up and expose yourself. And of course, you know, when you're looking at this and, you know, there's this ramp built up. Well, there's a couple of things that would help with a ramp. One is that you'd have this gradual incline that would not do the same thing. You're not having to lift mm-hmm. your knee up higher. You're just kind of walking up a gradual pace, and it's not going to do the same thing. I think probably some people, now this is not really what this is talking about here, but some people might think that, well, if you build steps and people might be able to look, you know, through the steps. Mm-hmm. I've heard people say that before. I don't think that's the same thing going on here. But yeah, that certainly would be true. You know, women have to be careful when they're wearing dresses and walking upstairs, you know.
You know, it's interesting when we think about this, even in a modern context, or and maybe not so many years ago in this country, part of etiquette was for a husband to walk behind his wife going up an escalator, for instance, something similar to that, to stairs, not necessarily a gradual incline, right. But it was because of the fact that there is the opportunity for some odd look to go upon there, or even if you're outdoors in a place of steps, wind can come apart, especially where we live. You know, the song is right. The wind does come sweeping down the plain.
Yes.
And I have seen sisters have to quickly put their hands down to their side and hold their skirts down to prevent this exposure.
Right. Yeah. And so, yeah, this is, and you go to Isaiah 47, 2 and 3, again, the thigh being nakedness here. So we've got to cover ourselves. You know, the thigh has to be covered, which I think is a big thing. We're talking about this beforehand. And the biggest thing that we're discussing really has to do with the leg versus the other aspect. And we know that you have to cover your upper torso as well. In John 21 and verse 7, says, "That disciple therefore whom Jesus loved saith unto Peter, It is the Lord. So when Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he girded his coat about him, for he was naked, and cast himself into the sea." So he was fishing in those linen breeches, if you will, and was just kind of like in, you know, shorts, basically, and wasn't wearing a shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And so what he does is he then puts his cloak back on him to cover himself up. Please don't, you know, comment on this that Peter was actually naked. I've had people comment on that, mm-hmm. and yeah, I'm like, are you
full blown?
Yeah, like I know. are you kidding me? And I've made this comment, and people like to pick on me for it, but that's fine. But listen, if we go fishing and you don't wear clothes, I'm kicking you off the boat.
Right.
Like, that's just not happening. I don't know a single man that you know, single heterosexual man that would go, you know what, it's okay, guys. You know, nobody would do that.
Yeah, and it just goes back to the point that God defines nakedness how he defines it.
Right.
And when we consider even going back to the Genesis account, when after they have made the aprons that they are wearing,
right.
What happens in Genesis 3:10 is this, and he says to God, "And I heard thy voice in the garden, I was afraid." Why was he afraid? It says, "Because I was naked and I hid myself." So he heard God. He heard his voice in the garden. He was afraid. Why was he afraid? Because he was naked.
Yeah.
And being in that state of even wearing these DIY aprons made of leaves, God did not dispute the fact that he was naked.
Yeah, no.
He said, "Who told you that you were naked?"
Yeah.
And then he proceeded to provide the tunic, which would be that covering from the shoulder to knee. And when we think about that, we tend to overlook that, and I think as we were talking about before the episode, is sometimes we focus really heavily on the thigh because that seems to be the problem. And in mm-hmm. fact, I've seen occasions, in fact, the way I grew up, just like you know, modesty was something that I was not taught, that I did not understand, that all I understood was what was in the school handbook. And the school handbook mm-hmm. said, if you stand up, and this wasn't a problem for the guys because we grew up in the 2000s and our shorts were already down here, so not a problem. But for girls, they said, if you stand up and you put your hands to your side, if it is above your fingertips, then that is improper. You have to go home and change. But so I thought that must be the standard, right? That must be the standard.
Yeah.
And some folks are still teaching that. They're saying shorts, as long as it reaches to the mid thigh, is okay. And we've seen that in camps in our brotherhood, right?
Yeah.
But what does God say? God says the thigh is exposed, it's nakedness. But we also have to be careful to remember that, you know, when we think about the shoulder, we think about the clavicle and getting our head through. It should be covered up here. And it also isn't just where the garment is cut. It's relative to how it fits as well. We know if it's too large, if we bend down or whatever, that can expose our nakedness up here on the top area. And this applies to men and women, by the way. If we have sleeves that are cut too open for men, we like to go and work out, it will expose our entire chest, and it's all for naught. We also have to be mindful of things that are too tight, right?
Right,
because if it's too tight, well, everything is being shown just through fabric, right? And that is something that would not be proper and would draw attention to the physical body rather than the spiritual worth that man and woman both have.
Yeah, you know, and that's one of those things that we didn't have in the book initially. Mm-hmm. But that's something and it's too what I teach on this. I don't talk much about a big problem today, which is leggings. You know, leggings are not pants, okay?
No.
They're just not pants. They don't, you know, leave anything to the imagination, you know, as people say.
Yeah.
That's not good. It's not good for the Christian woman to be doing that. Now, I know that that's, you know, evidently they're very comfortable, okay? I don't know. I've never worn leggings. I probably won't wear leggings because I'm a dude. But, they're very comfortable. It's in fashion, right? You know? And my understanding is it holds things together and makes you look better, you know, maybe than what you are. And so you might think, oh, I look good in leggings. And so, but here's the thing, you know, if what you're calling pants looks like they're painted on, you know, that's a problem. Same thing, you know, like if there's a guy that, you know, very muscular, you know, very attractive, and he wears a shirt that is skin tight.
Yeah.
You know, that's also a problem.
Right.
I mean, and really it doesn't matter if you're muscular or not, you know, like, you know, I've seen guys that are bigger that need to think about this.
Right.
You know, like, hey, you know, have a sense of modesty about you. Wear a shirt that fits you. And then, you know, there are certain shirts that, you know, I might wear to bed because they're comfortable, but I'm not going to wear out in public,
right,
you know? And so, yeah, we've got to think about these things, you know, concerning what the scriptures say about modesty and how this applies to both men and women, because it does. It does apply to both men and women. So, I've preached this, I don't know how many times, in talking about this, I have asked this question, you know, can apparel identify your heart? You know, and it can. It definitely can. In Proverbs 7 and verse 10, it talks about a woman that is wearing the attire of a harlot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, what does that look like, right? You know, how are you wearing the attire of a harlot? You know, we got to be careful with this, too, with children. You know, we're not going to hold the same exact standard, you know. You know, you're going to dress up a baby, and you're not going to be able to, you know, if he's wearing shorts, you're not going to be able to keep him from exposing himself. This is not the same thought process. But people oftentimes will think, well, I've got this child, and let me just dress up this child like an adult. And they'll, like, I've seen kids walking around in, like, Walmart wearing crop tops, and I'm thinking, oh, man, you should not be doing that to your child. And they're doing it, and then, like, even if they're thinking, well, you know, even they're thinking on biblical principles, they'd be like, well, you know, I'll stop them before, you know, they come of age or something. And it's like, but when is that going to be? They're going to become accustomed to it, and you're going to keep doing this, you know.
You know, and what is going on is that you are teaching that this is okay in a certain way, because that's the intent of the designer.
Yes.
And that's the intent of the people that push these. And when this becomes acceptable to dress children in such a way where they are improperly clothed or improperly covered and look like unchaste adults,
yeah,
who is going to win there?
Yeah.
Not the child. Yeah. Pedophile will win.
Oh, yeah. It's and grooming.
Yeah. Is what it is. And that, and we have to be honest about those about those things when it comes down to it. It's unsightly. It's it is horrible to think about. But there are certainly awful people that are engaging in that behavior, and they love this.
Yeah. You are not helping that person who's got a problem. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Which I think is a part of this altogether, because when you look at Matthew chapter 5, verses 27 and 28, it says that, you've heard that you're not supposed to commit adultery. Mm-hmm. But what about this? But I say unto you that everyone that looks at a woman to lust after her, well, he's committed adultery already in his heart. Mm-hmm. So we've got to be concerned about not only what we're wearing, but where we're looking, because there are going to be people out here that are dressed in improperly, immodestly, and we're going to be around them. Mm-hmm. And so we've got to be careful with how, where and, how and where we're looking.
And you keyed on something right there, is that Jesus points to where sin begins. Sin begins in the heart. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's coming at. Does a person physically commit adultery when they lust after a woman? No, that's impossible. It takes two people to commit adultery. Right. But it's the beginning of that. It makes it the start of the process that he's working through, in the same way that he relates that to murder with regard to hate. And it starts in the heart. And we remember that Jesus said it like this, that it is out of the abundance of the heart that the mouth speaks. And that's in Luke chapter 6, verse 45. And we know that the words come out, have a start in the heart. The actions that we take, or sin comes out and is expressed in our bodies through sometimes our fist when we're angry, right? Or sometimes through our loins when it comes to, the sin of adultery, fornication.
Right. In Luke 17:1. Jesus says unto his disciples, it is impossible that occasions and assembling should come, but woe unto him through whom they come. And you think about that as applied to dressing modestly. I've heard people say, that person's gonna lust even if I was wearing a paper sack or potato sack or whatever, something unflattering. And that may be the case. But woe unto them who through stumblings come.
Who are you responsible for?
Yeah, I'm responsible for me.
I start with myself,
family,
right?
Of course, yeah.
And I'm responsible for those that are under my oversight. Mm-hmm. But like a random person that sees me in public, I cannot control how they feel, how they perceive, how they lust, how they hate, whatever it is about me. But I can control how I present myself towards them, and I cannot present myself as a stumbling block to anyone and be right with God.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I brought this up. I actually preached on this recently. And in Acts 19 and 19, all these people had been, participating in witchcraft.
Yeah.
And they took all their books of magic and they burned them. Mm-hmm. Now, it says in that passage that it was 50,000 pieces of silver. They all think about how much this cost, and they all calculated it up, and they counted the price of them to be found at 50,000 pieces of silver. This would be about $1 million today. Mm. And you go, wow, that's a lot. But I did this even with movies. I used to have a lot of movies, and I found out about ClearPlay, where you could take those same DVDs and use their DVD player. Right. I threw them out. I was like, I don't need these, but I don't need to go donate them so somebody else can enjoy these. Mm-hmm. I just need to throw them away. And maybe the same thing is with some of the things that, Christians own as far as their clothing, and get rid of it. There might be things that they can have that, that they could wear if they altered?
Yeah, altering is an option. Or if it's unalterable, well, yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but sometimes we cut up old shirts and make them into rags to use for cleaning or whatever. Yeah. And there's other ways to purpose them. But sometimes it does come to the point where, man, this just needs to go. And it needs to get gone out of our house and out of our lifestyle.
Yeah, you know, this is it's a terrible thing, but like I've thought about this when it comes to fathers letting their daughters and their wives leave the house dressed immodestly, and I question those men. And it's like, what is wrong with you? And really, I can't think of many scenarios in which I could come up with a good response to that. Maybe it is that they like, you know, what they're doing enough that they don't care if anybody is like objectifying their daughters, you know, or their wives. You know, they just don't care.
And it's a cultural thing to be trained from that child dressing like, you know, an unchaste adult. Mm-hmm. And then it continues, and that progression as they get in to be teenagers. And then what is that? Yeah. What is that springtime event that happens every year where teenage girls parade their bodies?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And reveal everything in many cases.
Yeah.
And, you look at that, and it challenges you as a man, as a father. Like, what you do matters. What you allow matters. Yeah. That weighs heavy, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it has to be done.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's I'm very thankful. I think I bring up my father-in-law practically every episode because he's had a pretty big impact on me as far as preaching is concerned. But my father-in-law. He did, I think he was a part of camp. I think that's how this started. He was a part of a camp where they had, I guess, one of the guys there that was in charge, or maybe his lectureship, I can't remember what it was, but some preacher got on to him because he was like, oh, well, we don't need to have, you know, mixed swimming. You know, and he was talking about that, where boys and girls swim at the same time, wearing bathing suits. Like, mm-hmm. he was just saying, this is not good. And maybe it is that he was preaching on this, whatever the case. But some brethren got upset with him and said that, you know, it wasn't, you know, he was off on this and that he should probably consult older preachers. And so, you know what he did? He did. He said they still considered him green and wet behind the ears. And so these so-called spiritually minded brethren invited him to go and ask what others thought of this. And so that's the whole situation. I'm going to give you several quotes here. And some of these guys you're going to know very well. But Garland Elkins, you know, from the Memphis School of Preaching, you know, he's deceased now, wrote this: "You are on solid and safe scriptural ground when you oppose immodesty. The Bible certainly teaches that immodesty is sinful. There are many defenders of immodesty, but there is no defense. Of course, the activity of swimming is not wrong, but the scant bathing suits and near nudity are indeed wrong. It is wrong to expose one's nakedness, whether in a bathing suit, shorts, or a dress, etc. It is proper to give examples of immodesty." E. Claude Gardner, President Emeritus of Freed Hardeman University, wrote, "Some may believe that they can participate in mixed swimming without consequences, but their participation may become a stumbling block to others." Buster Dobbs, editor of the Firm Foundation, wrote, "Shamefacedness helps define the word modest. It means, among other things, bashful. A person who is timid, shy, and easily embarrassed will not expose as much flesh as the average bathing suit bears." Someone asked the question, "If today's swimming attire is modest, how much more would a person have to take off to be immodest? Your position on this question is doubtless correct." Leroy Brownlow, minister, writer, and publisher, wrote, "We know that we are considering a command, 1 Timothy 2:9, and we know that the purpose of a command is to apply it and control the conduct of an individual. Why have a command if you don't apply it? Yet there are those who don't object to preaching 1 Timothy 2:9 if you don't apply it. But if a preacher does not help the people to apply command, what is his job? Robert Taylor. You know Robert Taylor, minister and writer, wrote, "You are right in what you preached, and they should hold your hands high. You are right to name mixed swimming as a specific example of immodest dress. The families there who participate in such should give it up promptly. Such is not becoming a Christian." Johnny Ramsey, minister and teacher of the Brown Trail School of Preaching, wrote, "I agree with you 100%. What you said and the applications made are needed everywhere. We must apply what we preach on any subject, and certainly on modesty in these wicked and worldly days." Hardeman Nichols, minister, wrote, "Thus, with the two terms modest and shamefacedness, this scripture commands modest apparel from a modest heart, which is rooted in a character that considers the effect of a Christian's dress upon others, and would always restrain a good person from an unworthy act or appearance. In the light of the language, I believe a mature heart must reach the conclusion that the type of dress and the close proximity of both sexes in the general setting of mixed swimming is forbidden by Christians. I would not be surprised if some good people do not know how to apply the principles of the Bible to many specific cases of immodesty. Since we live in such an immodest age, it would be easy for one's sensibilities to be dull. Does the scanty attire associated with swimming, where both sexes are present, war against my soul and the souls of others? I think the answer is obvious. Then God begs us to abstain from that attire that goes for both male and female alike." David Farr, minister, writer, past director of the East Tennessee School of Preaching, wrote, "In summary, of course, you are right in warning against swimming suits or anything else which provoke lust. There are times when such things need to be specifically named." Perry B. Cotham, minister, writer, missionary, wrote, "I realize in our days of loose morals, many do not have modesty, and this is true of many members of the church. The scanty covering of the new lady's bathing suit would not be very modest." And of course, at this time, it's not even comparable to what we would have today.
Yeah.
"I do not know of any good, faithful gospel preacher who would condone or endorse such a practice." V.P. Black, minister and writer, said, "The Bible has much to say about modesty. We are living in an age when the world looks upon modesty as a joke. We as children of God should look upon modesty in the light of the Word of God and not in light of the world. There is not anything wrong with giving examples." And then lastly, Winford Clark, elder, minister, author, wrote, "As to the matter of modesty, there can be no doubt that mixed swimming, males and females, would violate the teaching of 1 Timothy 2:9. If a swimsuit would not be immodest by Paul's definition, then it would be hard to find a garment that could be called immodest. I'm sure you know that Thayer defines apparel as a lowering, letting down. A garment let down, it seems that the background would be that of ladies who went into the fields to work and would raise their dresses and fold them into something like a belt or girdle. Thus, Paul would speak of the lowering of the garment to cover the nakedness thus exposed. One would surely have a difficult time lowering the modern attire used for swimming." Mm-hmm. Now, this, I believe all this is in that appendix at the back.
It is.
But I think something that's not in there is going to be pretty telling for people who are members of the church and know these preachers that we've mentioned very well. So this was sent out to 20 preachers. 19 of them said the same thing. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have everything here, but 19 of them said the same thing. The one who didn't was Reubel Shelley.
Wow.
So if you know, you know, who he is and what, mm-hmm. you know, he is known for, then you're going to realize really quickly where you want to stand on this.
Right.
So, yeah, there's lots more that we could talk about. I mean, you know, you could probably write an entire book on this subject because there's all kinds of ways to apply it. I'm glad we talked about, you know, the tightness of the clothing and mm-hmm. things like that, that we, you know, we just didn't get to in the book. But that those things are all just really necessary.
And also the emphasis, just that this is not isolated to our sisters. This is for men too.
Right.
You know, and this is a moral law, so that means it's universal. It applies to even non-Christians, and we ought to be the examples that proclaim God's word through not just our words, but our actions. We need to also remember that it is consistent across the board, no matter where we are. This was in the context, a lot of these quotes were in the context of mixed swimming, because right. that was where the thing started right. with the questioning. But, you know, it does not change the way that we are clothed when we go swimming or when we go and play a sport. And you know, I've noticed something that happened in the NBA recently. The NBA, the shorts are becoming shorter for some reason. They've yeah. started to go back the other way from what they were. But a lot of these men are not happy with that, or maybe it's just for an athletic advantage, but they are wearing long leggings underneath that go to the knee.
Yeah.
And they appear to be more comfortable in that, and they are adequately clothed when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And I think that we need to learn that even with our children, if they are playing a sport or it's the middle of the summer and whatever it is, you can't be naked. You got to yeah. be adequately clothed. And we have to be consistent in all times in walking that way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Anything else you got to say with that, Matt?
Man, we don't have the time for it.
Okay, so. Fair enough. There would be lots to say about that, and I'm sure that others might have questions. We would encourage you to look at the book, look at the appendix in the back, and any questions, you know, we're very reachable, both of us, and we would love to study with you concerning the matter. But thank you for your time, and we're glad to be able to do this on the Scattered Abroad Network. And once again, we invite you to check out our website at ironworkspress.org, and you will be able to look there and also Scattered Abroad. Their website as well to find out more about these great works. Thank you for your time.